Welcome to the Maze Marketing Podcast. This isn't another podcast about marketing tricks or hacks, but about building effective marketing systems, beating marketing overwhelm, and communicating your expertise with your hosts, Rob Drummond and Jonathan Wilson. So I first met today's guest about 2 years ago. I was in a full-time employment. I was head of marketing for a company fairly near here. And we had some problems. And one day my boss, the MD, came in and was like, right, I've got the solution. We've hired this marketing consultant. He used to work for a competitor. He's going to come in and fix all our problems. And I scratched my head and I was like, oh man, you know, this guy's got to be a tool. Anyway, he came in and it became very apparent very quickly that Roland wasn't a tool. And actually, we shared many of the same interests. You know, we both used Infusionsoft. We were both students of Perry Marshall. We're both students of direct response marketing. And I was like, oh, right. And actually, it's become apparent since then that we have a lot of complementary skills. So now, these days, we like to meet up every now and again and have a coffee and stop each other from doing very stupid things. And the last time we met up, Roland mentioned that he'd been working on something called a behavioral engagement nurture sequence. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And then he went on to explain that it also ties into something called RFM, which is recency, frequency, money. I was like, right, now we're cooking and I need to get Roland on the podcast to explain the connection between, well, firstly, what is a behavioral engagement nurture sequence and how it relates to RFM. So Roland, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Rob. I really, really appreciate it. Yeah, it's always great to meet up with you and talk about direct response marketing and, like you say, stop each other from doing stupid things. But also just to, I guess, remind ourselves some of the things that we may have forgotten or overlooked in, you know, this maze that is, you know, human persuasion and direct response marketing.
Perhaps before we dig into that, I mean, you've got quite an interesting background. You started off as a photographer.
Yeah, that's right.
Perhaps you can tell people like a little bit about your journey to direct response. Give people a bit of a background.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So, as Rob said, I started out as a photographer. So, in 2005, I decided I wanted to be a full-time photographer. So, you know, I bought some gear, I got some clients, and, you know, I started making some money and life was great. And for the next 3 years, my turnover doubled or more than doubled. And I was like, hey, this is great. You know, it's always good to see a business that's growing. And, you know, I managed to, you know, get my weekends booked with weddings. I was doing portraits. I was doing a lot of corporate work. I was being flown around the world by international clients. And, you know, I was then expanding into doing graphic design and stuff like that. So, you know, it was all good. And then 2008 happened. And I remember exactly when it happened because I was on honeymoon in Barcelona in this safe cocoon shielded from the chaos of the world. And I stupidly turned on the television and the only program in English was the news. And it happened to be Monday, the 15th of September, 2008. And, you know, there I am watching this unfolding of the financial crisis. And I literally cannot take my eyes off the television for one simple reason. And that's I want to know what's going to happen. And of course, all the TV pundits are saying is, what has happened? And it's like, well, okay, that's nice and I don't care. Like, what does it all mean? So I then kind of did my own analysis of this, which was basically looking at previous recessions and the entrepreneurs that I'd known whose businesses went bust virtually overnight. And then looking at this and then predicting what would happen because of what had gone on in the past. And my prediction was bleak. And I suppose my prediction was pretty close to what actually happened. You know, the banks did stop lending and lots of small businesses went bust. Lots of big businesses went bust. I stupidly said, well, lots of businesses are going to go bust, but my business is going to succeed. Yeah, like other people will fail, but I won't fail. And my success strategy was to outmarket my competitors, which ended up being I'm going to try and outspend my competitors. So what I did very well was get cheap traffic. What I didn't do very well was get conversions. So traffic without conversions equals burning money. Mm-hmm. And I was burning lots of money.
I like to call it funding the Google Christmas party.
Exactly right. I did a lot of funding for the Google Christmas party. When I, burned the money in the bank account and under the bed and stored in the books, I realized that I had to get a job. Mm. But I also realized that I had to do something different. Specifically, I had to learn how to turn strangers into customers on demand. Mm-hmm. And I believed that this was possible, but I didn't know if it was possible. I didn't know who could teach me. And even if I did know who could teach me, I had no idea. I had no way of paying for the help because I, burned all my savings. Mm-hmm. So that led me down the rabbit hole of trying to learn about direct response, but I didn't know it was called direct response then. So, I got a job as a marketing manager, and then I did the CIM courses that I paid for myself from a £21,000 a year salary. So, how did I save £3,000 a year from £21,000 a year salary? It was very simple. I said to my wife, we ain't going on holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that kind of stuff is really hard. Yeah. Mm. And so I did the first CIM course, and although I learned some interesting stuff, I didn't learn how to turn strangers into customers on demand. So I thought, okay, fine. I'll do another one of their courses. Cause the CIM, they're the biggest name.
There must be something that you missed.
Exactly. So I did one of the, I did the next course, another £3,000, another year of my life. And then I had to sit down and tell my wife, I've failed, £6,000, a lot of sacrifices. I have failed to discover how to turn strangers into customers on the month. But I knew that learning how to do this would unlock, this would be the key to riches in my life. This would be the key to future success. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I don't want to stop this journey. Will you continue to, basically endure future sacrifices with me?
I'm familiar with this conversation exactly. As well, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So, fortunately she said yes. And, so what did I do? I tried to learn the secrets in my job, failed. Tried to learn the secrets through traditional education, failed. So I got another job, and it was working for a property education company. And my role was simple: get qualified leads for the sales team. Simple. There's one problem. I had no idea how to do this. So I'm failing miserably at my job. And then one day my boss, it was just a throwaway comment. He said, you should read some books by Dan Kennedy. Okay, immediately go onto Amazon, discover that there's 20 books. Okay, what's the number one book? So it was probably the number one book by Dan Kennedy. It was like, right, I'll buy that. And it was called No BS Direct Response Marketing. So, the next day or 2 days later, the book arrives and I start reading this thing. And I call this the map to El Dorado, the fabled city of gold, because suddenly there was something in my hands that said, this is how you turn strangers into customers on demand. And it was suddenly like all of those years of sacrifice were worth it. It was like, here's this thing that can teach you how to do it. So one book led to another, which led to another, taking me further down the rabbit hole. And of course, and so my education initially started with books because that was what I could afford. And then it went to, online training programs. And then it went eventually to mentorship programs. Yeah. And again, all of this I'm paying for out of my own pocket. Yeah. And everything was going fine. But it always felt like an awful lot of work for a tiny increase in response. Yeah. And then in 2014, my daughter was born. And in December, I took the entire month off to look after her. And, you know, babies sleep a lot. So when she was sleeping, I was learning about this new form of marketing called product launches. And by the end of December, I was ready to use this in the real world. And this is where kind of everything that you've learned impacts everything that you're learning today. Because, you know, although I was learning about product launches and it's a system for online persuasion, the absolute core of it is storytelling and copywriting. Mm-hmm. And all of that wasn't in the course, but I'd been learning about all of that for the previous 2 years. So I took, you know, the copywriting knowledge that I had and the storytelling study that I've been doing, and I applied, you know, fused it with this product launch stuff that I'd done. And then, you know, the 5th of January, 2015, it's the first working day of the year. My boss sits me down and he says, I want us to be the biggest name in the UK for this new business opportunity, selling white label products on Amazon. And I was like, okay, great. The only way we can do this is with this new form of marketing that I've discovered. And to my great surprise, he said, you're the head of marketing, do what you think is best. I was like, wow, I was expecting some resistance to this idea. So the resistance came pretty quick, because I then sat down with my team and waxed lyrical about this new form of marketing and how it was going to change our lives. And they looked at me like I had lost my mind.
You sat down the sales team and said, we're not going to sell anything until this date.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, I mean, they absolutely hated the idea because it was a lot more work. It was an untested idea. And they were just like, what's wrong with you? And then I wrote the target on the board. So we were selling a £27 discovery day, or £27 tickets to a discovery day. And the target was to sell 1,000 within the sales window, which was only 9 days. And to put that into some kind of perspective, selling 200 would have been really good. Selling 300 would have been amazing. So 1,000 was just way beyond anything anybody could comprehend. I mean, literally, they all thought I was crazy.
Because it wasn't about the 29 quid, was it? It was about the upsell that you delivered at the event. So it's about just getting people to that day, basically.
Exactly. It's getting people in the room. And like I said, 200 would have been, you know, 200 would have been really good. You know, if we got 200 people in the room, everyone would have given me a pat on the back. But, you know, I was swinging for the fences, and I forced this idea through, and, you know, I put a lot of people's noses out of joint, and that put me in a very, very precarious position because, you know, yeah, if it worked, great. But, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of support for this idea, and a lot of people were basically waiting for me to crack and looking to see if this whole thing would fail. So the first, you know, the day the shopping cart opens, the first day of selling was with a webinar, and we get a bunch of people on the webinar and we sold 23. So if you're trying to hit a 200 target, 23 is fine. But when you're trying to hit a 1,000 target, like, you were a long way from Kansas. So the next day, everybody's looking at me like, you know, this whole idea of yours is a complete failure. This last month of work has just been a complete waste. Like,
what's there's a P45 dangerously close to your desk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my response was, let's make the next 8 days great. Let's, you know, just focus on this system and see if it works. And, you know, I genuinely had no reason why I should trust this system, because I'd never used it. I didn't know anybody else that had used it, but it just made sense to me. And so I was like, I've got to see it through to the end. So see it through to the end. And we crossed the finishing line in triumphant style. So we sold 1,115 of these Discovery Day tickets. So we smashed even the goal that I had set. Yeah. So did the doubters say, you know, Roland, you're a genius, you know, thank you so much. No, of course not. The only thing they said...
I'm shaking my head for, you know, all the listeners, like, no.
Exactly. There is no way they were going to say that. So the only thing they wanted to know was, how could we make this better next time? So how we could make this better next time was, rather than sell a £27 Discovery Day ticket, let's sell a £2,000 workshop or £2,000 online course. So I was completely terrified. I was completely terrified because I was like, can you sell something at that price from a sales page? Can you sell it online without a sales team? Because, you know, my experience said, no, you can't. Yeah, I genuinely had no idea if it could be done. And also, hey, if it could be done, fine, but could I do it?
It's undoubtedly hard.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I was terrified, but I was also excited to test the limits of this system because, you know, this was what I call marketing dynamite. It was the most explosive thing I had ever used. Yeah, it was literally the most powerful thing I'd ever used. So I was like, hey, let's give it a try. So we used the same system, you know, different stories, but the same system. And the only difference was instead of selling a £27 product, we're selling a £2,000 product. And, you know, I put this thing together, I held my breath and crossed my fingers and toes. And at the end of the 9-day sales window, we'd made £673,000 worth of sales. And that was the moment when I realized that this system could sell any product at any price in any market. And that was the system when it was, that was the point when I realized I could write my own ticket. You know, that was when it was like all of the years of struggle, all of the years of sacrifice had paid off, you know.
So it was a 9-day sales window, but yeah, you weren't generating all of those sales on the first day though, presumably.
No. So what everybody wants is that each day of the 9-day sales window, you make some sales, or ideally, they're an equal spread across all 9 days. But of course, that's not what happens, yeah? So what happens is on day one, you'll make 10%. And on day two, you'll make 1%. On day three, you'll make 0%.
At which point, all of the salespeople are hitting the roof, saying, what are you doing? This isn't working. Why are we not sending more emails?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then you have like a second webinar and hey, you might sell another 10% of the sales. So at this point, you're 3/4 of the way through your sales window and you've sold 20%, maybe 30% of the total sales you will make from the campaign. So what is the knight in shining armor that comes through to save the day? And that knight in shining armor is a long copy sales page. So in every single campaign I have ever run, the sales page has accounted for 50 to 90% of the total sales of the campaign. So the long copy sales page outsells the webinar and the sales team combined. Yeah. So if people are thinking, I've got a big sales team and, you know, they're doing great, it's like, yeah, they might be doing great. Yeah. And guess what? The company I worked for, they had a big sales team and it was a very good sales team. I'm not going to fault the sales team, but I am going to say that a long copy sales page, so, you know, a web page with a lot of copy and, you know, no fancy design, outpulls two webinars and a sales team combined.
I think my perspective on that is that people who are really interested in buying would much rather read a long letter than speak to a salesperson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing is that when you're on a webinar, you have to watch the webinar or the presentation at the speed at which it happens. And, you know, that may or may not be fine. But when it gets to the offer, you know, again, you watch it at the speed it happens. So if you miss part of it or you want to read it again, you cannot do that. Yeah? The other thing with a webinar is you have to attend at that point at a specific time, and you might be busy at that specific time. So a sales letter lets you read it when you want. It allows you to read as much as you want before you make a buying decision, and it allows you to read it as many times as you want. So for anyone on the line thinking, no one's going to read it more than once, like, you know, once you dig into Infusionsoft,
track any analytics, like if you have, even just Google Analytics, if you have a look at your purchases, the transactions, and the number of repeat visits against the number of new visitors, the sales aren't coming from the new visitors, they're coming from the people who were already been on the page at least once.
Exactly. So they read the page and they like the idea of it and they're still going, I don't know. And then another email sends them back to the sales page. So they read it again. And, you know, guess what? The second time round, they're not reading it word for word. They're probably not reading it word for word the first time. You know what I'm like when I read sales pages. I'll read the headline. I'll read the first few paragraphs. And I'm like, yeah, I like it. I like it. I like it. How much is it? Scroll, 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 scroll. It's £100. I'm buying it. Oh, it's £10,000. I better scroll back up and find out what I'm buying. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people do that, because if you're spending, a small enough amount of money that it doesn't matter to you, it's easy to make that decision.
It's do you have to justify that purchase to your wife when your credit card bill comes through?
Exactly. That was what I was getting to. Yeah? It's exactly right. If you have to justify that to your wife, you spent how much?
I'm sorry there. You know that holiday we had planned? Well, we're not now. But, you know, the holiday instead is going to be Greece.
Exactly. And when that happens, you are reading that thing 3, 4, 5 times, because you want to be absolutely certain that it's worth the investment. You want to be absolutely certain that you believe that you can do this. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, the guru can do it, but can ordinary people change their lives with this? If they put in the work, will they get the results? And, you know, I'm not going to lie, putting in the work is not fun. It takes a lot of effort to study stuff. Yeah. So I took a month off to learn about product launches, and that kind of, you know, 6 hours a day dedicated is like easy when you can block time out like that. But I've never since been able to take a month out of my life and dedicate 6 hours a day to learning about something. So you're learning about it in the chaos of everything else that's going on, whether that's running your own business, whether that's going to work, plus, you know, having a social life and having a family and, you know, being a dad and all of that. So in amongst all of that chaos, you're trying to carve out dedicated time when you're not exhausted, when you can learn about something. So learning new skills is hard, and then applying new skills can be absolutely terrifying because you don't know if it's going to work. And you have to, you know, take a leap of faith.
I think there's two elements of this. You've got the long copy sales page. By the way, did you have videos on this sales page, or is this a text only lesson?
Text only. Okay. So I know that putting videos in is the new thing, and last year I ran a sales page with a client, and we were going to test having the video sales letter at the top of the page and then the long copy sales page below it versus just the long copy sales page. Because I was convinced, you know, I should have said I'll bet my fee, but I didn't. But I was convinced that the long copy sales page without the video would outpull the page with the video. But we were going to test it. We'd set up the two separate pages, and then at the last minute, the guy said no, he just wanted all the traffic to go to one page. So okay, fine. But like, lots of people think that the video sales letters outpull on copy, because, hey, nobody likes to read and it's easier to listen to something. But for the same reasons that when you're reading something, you can reread the bits that you want to read. You can't do that with a VSL. Mm. Yeah. I like to be in control of the customer journey down the page and through the story. And so I don't like to have things that can distract them and take them elsewhere. So I don't really want them to watch a video. I want them to see the headline and get pulled into the copy. And suddenly I've got their full attention. I've got them in this world and I want to take them on a journey of how I can help change their life. And I want to show them that in the most exciting and engaging way possible. And, you know, the only exception, although I still prefer written testimonials, is to have a video testimonial. Hmm. Because guess what? Videos can't be fake. I mean, they can be edited, but, you know, let's face it.
There's a level of engagement you get with a video. Like, you can see them, you can hear their intonation. There's the non-verbal communication aspect of it as well.
Exactly. So the video testimonials are the only, like, exception to copy that I like to have on the page. And even with graphics, like John Carlton has this thing where he says, you know, every image has to earn its place on the page. And, you know, if you're talking about print and direct mail days, like, there's an obvious reason why they have to earn their place.
It's cost.
Because of cost, exactly. But of course, online, there is no cost. A page can be as long as you want. It can be a mile long. But does that interfere with this journey that you've got the reader on? Because guess what? Getting someone's focused attention is a privilege, and you cannot neglect that. And, you know, by putting in images that might take them somewhere else, or, you know, take their mind somewhere else, you're neglecting that privilege that they've given you, which is their focused attention. So any graphics or images that I put on, I only want to either explain the model or show them what they're buying. Anything else, get rid of it.
Yeah, the image has to communicate a message. It can't just be a decorative image, which is true of pretty much any web page, actually.
Exactly right, you know. And, you know, people like to talk about all of these sales pages that look good. And, you know,
no one cares how it looks. They only care what it's going to do for them. So.
Exactly. You know, every time I've, like, tested, designed, or, you know, I say pretty versus ugly, and I had a graphic designer kind of leave a comment, and it's a fair comment, which was, there are nuances other than just pretty and ugly. Yeah. but every time I've kind of put graphical elements onto a sales page that I felt were unnecessary and were purely there to make it look nicer, the response has gone down. And so, you know, I want black text on a white background. You know, now graphic designers don't, for some reason, find black offensive.
This literally makes me see red. This is like a danger topic. Exactly. I'm going to flip the chair over in a minute.
Yeah, you know, for some reason they're like, no, we'll have gray text because gray text is softer and it looks better. And I'm like, it's harder to read.
yeah. It's closer to white. It's harder to read. Like, why would you lower the readability of your letter?
Yeah. You know, if I'm asking someone to read 10,000 words of copy, I want to make that process as easy as possible.
In a legible font that isn't some custom font you found on Google Fonts, you know, some handwritten nonsense that is, you know, probably for screen reading a sans serif font, whereas you might use a serif font if you were sending someone a letter. Right. Like small readability aspects. If you're going to ask someone to read 10,000 words and then make it really hard to read, and then wonder why you don't get any sales, and then say that long sales letters don't work. It's like, well, there's probably things that you missed in there.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
I think the other thing I was going to say about this was that what you're doing here is you're combining the long sales letter with a deadline.
Yes.
Which I think is really important. Otherwise, it's like, big decision. Not sure if Lindsay's going to like it. going to put it off, whereas actually there's a deadline, so I have to make that decision.
Yeah, so that is a very important point when it comes to a launch. And that's, there's this open and shut deadline of when you can buy the product. So, and the, so within that launch period is you get the product and you get a whole load of bonuses that make this unbelievable. Or not unbelievable, but just it sweetens the deal. Now, the deadline will be, you know, will be more impactful if you say you literally, you know, after this deadline, you cannot buy the product. So you can't buy the product. You know, you're thinking about it. You like the idea. You're unsure. No problem. But you literally cannot buy this for another 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that deadline's going to be pretty big on someone's mind. If they like the idea and they're thinking about buying this, then they are going to remember the deadline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially if you say you can't buy it for another 12 months. It's like, okay, let me think, you know, I want to change my life. I better do it now.
Yeah, they don't need to add that to their to-do list. It's going to be front of mind.
It's going to be front of mind, exactly. Whereas if you say you can still buy it tomorrow after the deadline, but you just don't get these bonuses. Well, unless the bonuses are so mouth-watering that they're like, yeah, I better buy it now, you know, the impact of the deadline is lessened. So yeah, the secret to a launch is the combination of upfront value, storytelling, social proof, and an irresistible offer. Mm-hmm. And part of the irresistible offer is the deadline. It's that urgency that you create with the deadline.
Mm-hmm. Great. So you've got a deadline, you get people to buy. Is this the point at which you're introducing a behavioral engagement nurture sequence?
Now, that is a very good question. And the short answer is you can put a behavioral engagement nurture sequence anywhere. So, you know, you could have it to take someone from a new lead, so they opt into your database, through to a first purchase, so a welcome mat purchase. So let's say it could be a £27 product, it could be a £97 product, but it's a small enough price point that it's easy for someone to say, yeah, I like the idea of that. I will take the first step. But equally, so they take the first step, great, but what are you trying to do? You're trying to get them to what I call your core offer as quickly as possible. So let's say your core offer is £2,000. So how do you take them from they opt in for a free report, then they buy your first, or how do you take them from opt in for a free report to they're going to buy your core offer? Mm-hmm. And a behavioral nurture sequence can help with that. Now, what I wanted to also layer on over the top is recency, frequency, monetary. RFM, which stands for recency, frequency, monetary. So when somebody opts in, some of those people are super ready to move forward. You know, I want to change my life. I want to do it now. And hey, I've read a long copy ad, whether that's on an email or whether it's through a Facebook post or whether it's a long video on YouTube. They've, you know, so you've earned their trust. You've explained how you can help them. Now I want to change my life. So,
they've already put in the years of sacrifice and they're ready to actually, you know, make a change or whatever.
Exactly. They're ready to make a change. So they opt in for your free report. So on the thank you page, you can then say, do you want to buy my £27 or £97 product? So welcome, Matt. And some people will. They're like, yeah, I'm ready to change my life. Yeah. On that thank you page, you can then say, do you want to buy my £297 product? Mm-hmm. And some people will. And on that thank you page, you can say, do you want to buy my £2,000 product? And guess what? Some people will, most people won't.
The technology stack that is available to us with things like Infusionsoft or Thrivecart, a lot of people are using that, makes it very easy for you to gather someone's credit card details on a low value sale, like a $29 book or whatever it is. And then it's a one click process to kind of add more stuff to the order, basically. Like, it's not like they're re-entering their details or anything.
Yeah, and that makes it so much easier for them to then buy more things, yeah? Mm. So that takes advantage of recency. And so when you take advantage of recency, two things happen. Number one, you give the customer a better experience. And number two, you can dramatically transform the success of your business because you can make profit on day one. Because, you know, if you get 100 leads a day, or, you know, if you get, yeah, if you get, let's say you get 1,000 leads a day, that's a lot of money, but you get 1,000 leads a day, spending $5,000 a day on ads. But let's say two people buy your £2,000 product and, you know, X number also buy your £300 product, some buy your £100 product, some buy your £27 product. And of course, the vast majority just take your free. Mm-hmm.
The vast majority do not.
Exactly. The vast majority do not. But everybody, so the 10%, like the 20% that took up your £27 offer, the 10% that took up your £197 offer, the 5% or the, you know, 4% that took up, that also took up your £497 offer, and then the 0.5% that took up your £2,000 offer, you add that together, you might have made your lead gen cost free or close to free, close to break even. Yeah. So on day one, you're at break even. Sweet. So how does the behavioral nurture sequence come in? Well, unfortunately, fit like 60% of people that say, you know, out of the hunt, you know, 60% of people that opt in to get your lead magnet will download it. So 40%, could be 50%, will not. Mm-hmm. They won't even download the free book or the free video course or whatever it is you're giving away that they asked for. Mm-hmm. Because somewhere between the 5 minutes of I opted in for this and now it's in my inbox, they've been distracted and they never return to it. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? So yeah, most people have a nurture sequence that's like 6 emails. It might be 10 emails of, you know, hi, this is how I can help you. Mm. And, you know, people may read them, they may not.
Which is better than not having a nurture sequence, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It is absolutely better than not having a nurture sequence. And guess what? The, you know, let's say the 50% of people that opt in but buy nothing, of those, there's going to be a percentage that are at least keen to know who you are and how you can help them. And that nurture sequence starts that relationship. Mm. So, yeah, that takes them from, I don't know who you are, to, yeah, I now know who you are, how you can help me, what makes you different, and why I should trust you.
Because until they trust you, they're not going to read 10,000 words of your long form sales letter.
Exactly. Exactly right. Mm. So the nurture sequence can take them from, you know, zero to I now trust you. And guess what? At that point, you could say, right, are you interested in my £27 product? Yeah. And at that point, it's easier for them to buy it. But what does the behavioral nurture sequence do? So, like, if we say there's a 5-step process going from, you know, step one being opt in for the lead magnet. Yeah. Or no, not opt in, actually download it. Yeah. Mm. So the first email you send is, thank you for opting in. Here's your lead magnet. Click the link to download it. And 50 or 60% of people will open the email and will download the ebook. But the other 40% that didn't, then send them more emails to resell them on the idea of actually reading the book. Because mm-hmm. as long as you have value in it, you want people to read it.
Yeah.
Because the people that actually read your book are the people that are then going to want to work with you later.
Yeah, don't move on and start selling the £29 products if they haven't even downloaded the ebook, that the free ebook that they opted in for in the first place.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So there's, you can have 10 emails, you can have 20 emails, but what are they trying to do? They're basically reselling the value of the ebook. Yeah. Now, you can do that with several ways, several different hooks, one of which might be basically rewriting the ad that they read that got them to opt in. Mm-hmm. And this time, instead of opting in, you're saying, click here to download the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So that's one way of doing it. And of course, there are other hooks that you can use to actually get them to download. And then, of course, you can put something that's a little bit more harsh, something along the lines of, do you really want to be in my world? If not, I'm going to unsubscribe you from the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that kind of, you know, people might be saying, well, why would I, you know, after I've paid to get someone on the list, why do I want to push them off so soon? Well, guess what? It's not that you want to push them off. You're trying to cajole them into taking action. Mm-hmm. And the first action you want them to take is download and read the book.
It's because you don't actually want a big list. Actually, all a big list does is causes you to have a big bill from whatever email service provider you use, because they all bill based on number of contacts in the system.
Yeah.
So if you've got a large number of contacts who've opted in and are never taking any action, then, you know, based on recency, you know, if they haven't taken any action recently, they're not going to buy anything in the immediate future. You want them off the system.
You want them off the system. Exactly right. So if you then say there's three, so they download your book, your ebook, and then you've got three value videos. And again, you'll have 10 different emails within that second step. So the first one can be quite simple, like, I've got this video, it's going to show you these three things, go watch it here. Mm. And some people will. Video two, you know, email two within that step can be a story about why they should watch the video. And then, you know, email three could be a testimonial and, you know, some other reason why they should read the email. Now, of course, some people might just be busy.
Hmm.
So they read one email, a week goes by and they haven't opened their inbox or they haven't checked their inbox. So you might have sent them one or two emails and that's fine. And then you send them another email and they're like, oh yeah, I wanted to get to that. Hmm. So the fact that you've written 10 emails within step two is actually useful for the customer because it allows them to go through at the speed that they want to.
There will also be different emails that you send, assuming, so I think a mistake that a lot of people make with this is just sending the same nag email 7 different times.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what, if you didn't reply to the first one, I'm not going to reply to the 7th one.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is telling different stories, different anecdotes that have the same call to action at the end of it, because you're still on step two. You're not asking them to take a different step yet.
Exactly right. Exactly.
But you're still telling interesting stories.
Yeah.
And actually different headlines, different email subject lines, different stories will resonate with different people on the list. So some people on the list, based on their interests or whatever, will respond to email three. Some will respond to email five, just because it resonates more with them. They see more of their story in that story or whatever it is.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And yeah, so the key thing with the behavioral nurture sequence is that everything is based on an action that they take. And that action is not they open the email. The action is they open the email, click the link, and watch the video. Yeah? Or if it's read a blog post, they actually click the link and went to the blog post. You don't know if they've read it, but yeah. And in fact, actually, that's another thing. Having content in multiple formats helps someone. So in step two, you want them to consume the value content. So you could, first of all, send them to a video. But some people might be like, well, I'll watch a video if I have to, but I would prefer to read a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one could be, here's the same content as a blog post. Click to go and read it. And guess mm-hmm. what? Some people will do that because they literally prefer reading blog posts to not. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got the same content on a podcast, email three can be, get the same content as an audio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, guess what, exposes them to you in multiple formats. It allows them to consume the content in the form that's best for them. So video is great because they can see you. And as you've already said, there's this whole non-verbal form of communication. And some people love that. Other people don't. So they prefer to read it or they prefer to listen to it because they can do it while they're driving or at the gym or whatever.
I think we all get blinded by our own media preferences. Like, I generally prefer to read, although it depends on the circumstance. If I'm out, I like to go for long walks. If I'm out walking, it's podcast time.
Yeah.
Assuming I'm by myself and haven't got the family with me, because, yeah.
Exactly right.
If I really, really want to learn something, it's YouTube, it's videos. Although I use plugins to speed it up normally because I'm impatient. But other people won't. So it would be easy for me to say, okay, I'm a writer. I like to read. I like to write. So I'm gonna do lots of writing. But then I only appeal to people who also like to read. So actually, I mean, one of the reasons we started this podcast was to add the audio element in, which was absent, basically. I mean, we still do the occasional videos. We probably don't do as many as we should do.
Yeah.
You know, if you exclude all the training videos, we send a lot of emails, we send a lot of print newsletters. So it's just kind of redressing the balance, basically. And I think even actually just forcing us to do this podcast has meant over time that you just become more comfortable with it as well.
Yeah.
Because it's about comfort zones. It's like, I am most comfortable lurking in my cave and writing you a long email. I am least comfortable getting on a live webinar, although I will do that. But that doesn't mean that I should never get on a live webinar.
Yeah, exactly. And this whole thing is about giving the customer a better experience. So the customer that's ready to do it now, they want an email every day, and you send them a video, they'll watch a video. Even if they prefer to read, they're like, I'm hungry right now. But the more nonchalant person will say, I don't really want to read a video, I don't have time right now. Great. The next day or 2 days later, you send them to a blog post, they're like, I much prefer to read. Like, I'll do that now. So it helps people consume the content that they want at the speed that they want. So, yeah, if we say the next three emails are all about giving valuable content, and then all the next three steps are all about giving valuable content, and then the fifth step is, now it's time to make a decision about, do you want to work with me? Yeah? So you send them to a long copy sales page. And guess what? You can have 10 emails just trying to get them to click the link to read the long copy sales page, because a lot of them won't. Yeah. And you know, you're going to need to use a lot of storytelling elements as to why they should do this, because it's all about persuasion. You've got to persuade them that they want to do this, that this is going to help them. And if they don't believe that, then they're not going to click through to read the page.
Because most email systems will let you apply a tag or something like that when people click on a particular link, so you can see all of the contacts at step four who do not have that tag, and all of the contacts who do have that tag, and then you treat them differently accordingly.
Exactly.
It's far easier not to, but
yeah, people don't do this because they're lazy, but it's not I am a technophobe, and it's within my skill set and capability to set this up. So yeah, if I can set up all the technical stuff, anybody else can.
I think it's more just thinking through the steps. And I think there's an element of being, it's proximity. It's proximity to your own work and your own business. It's actually easier to do it as a consultant for someone else.
Well, it probably is, because, you know, why doesn't everybody have a nurture sequence? Because their work to put together. Why doesn't everybody have a behavioral nurture sequence? Because it's 10 times the work. You know, I'm not talking about writing 6 or 10 emails. I'm talking about writing 60 to 100 emails. Yeah. And I'm not talking about having 3 blog posts. No, I'm talking about having 3 blog posts, 3 podcasts, 3 videos, plus a lead magnet, or that could be an actual book. Yeah. So there's a lot of work involved. And that's why people don't do it. But of course, what's the advantage of doing it? Number one, you give your customer the better experience. Number two, you will make more money. Yeah. So, you know, step 5 gets people to read the sales page. Step six gets people who have read the sales page to go back to it. Because if you're selling something that is more than an immediate purchase price, an immediate purchase price is different for everyone. You know, some people it might be anything that's, you know, at the supermarket checkout. You know, that's normally like a pound or less than a fiver. That's an immediate purchase price. Anything more than a fiver, considered purchase, yeah? So if you're asking someone to spend £97 on something, that's probably a considered purchase. Even if it's not that much money, it's still a considered purchase. So they might need to go back to the sales page two or three times. So step six is sending people back to the sales page once they've read it once. Yeah. So you've read it once. Great. Here's why you should read it again. Yeah? Here's why you shouldn't miss out on this opportunity. Now, if we talk about RFM and what you were saying about what do you do once somebody's bought on a course. So if we go back to what we were saying, somebody opts in and they might buy one, two, three of your initial products. Well, you can have a behavioral nurture sequence for each of those products. So the first one takes someone from lead magnet to £97 product, yeah? And if they buy, then they go on to the next behavioral nurture sequence, which takes them from £97 product to 197 or 297 product. But of course, if they've jumped, you know, if they've already bought the 497 product, you don't start them at the same behavioral nurture sequence. No, you start them on the next one. Mm. And of course, you're, and that is understanding where they are in the customer journey that you're leading them down. But also, this speed lets you know, right, this is somebody that wants to take action. And also, it's someone, you know, so you've got recency, so speed, and monetary. So if they've already spent £500, £700, £1,000 with you, guess what? They're ready to spend more money with you. They're ready for, you know, if someone's, let's say, spent £1,500 or they've spent £2,000 with you on day zero, essentially, well, you better call them to say hello. You need a system that emails you to say, call this customer and say, dude, I love you. How can I help you? I want to offer you, you know, whether it's a half hour or an hour mentorship session, or you want to give them something so that they feel special, so that they feel that they feel noticed. But also, guess what? You know that they're an action taker. You know that there's somebody that wants to change their life quickly. How can you better help them?
What if someone gets stuck at a particular stage for, so let's say they're at stage three and they just stop taking action basically. And you obviously send them so many emails within a certain time frame. Yeah. But if they haven't responded, you know, their recency score goes down. Yeah. They are not as valuable a contact in your database anymore. What do you do with them then?
Yeah, so that is a very good question. And the answer is, so there's two answers. So answer A is they just go into the emails that everybody gets on the day. Yeah,
they go into the back pasture and they get an email every week or 2 weeks or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the lazy way of doing it. The way that you should do it is to create what I call an I love you sequence. So it's just value. And it can be value around something completely different. Because let's say that, let's say they've opted in to learn about copywriting and you're talking about copywriting, but you've gone down a rabbit hole and you're talking about the nuances of how to write a headline. And they're like, you know, I want to learn, you know, like I'm interested in copywriting, but I want to learn something about storytelling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you don't know that. But in your I love you sequence, you could have much more varied content just around copywriting in general. Because
change the theme a bit as well.
Exactly. You change the theme because what you're trying to do is get them re-engaged. You're trying to get them reading your emails again. And the way to do that is to just give them new content and different angles of which you can help them. And then the other thing is to use the Fibonacci sequence for spacing out your emails. So the Fibonacci sequence is where you add the previous number to, so 0 plus 1 is 1. Mm-hmm. 1 plus 1 is 2. 2 plus 1 is 3. 3 plus 2 is 5. You know, what is it?
Five plus three is eight.
So as they get further along the sequence, so initially they're getting very, you know, emails like virtually every day. And then within a week or so, they're getting emails, you know, 2 a week. Then it comes to 1 a week. Then it becomes, you know, 2 a month. So what you're not doing is basically giving them an excuse to hit the unsubscribe button. Because what you're saying is, hey, if you're not that interested in what I have to say, I'm going to be aware of that. And I'm not going to send you so many emails.
So you're listening to the lack of response.
Exactly. And that is a very good way of putting it. You're listening to their lack of response. And so going back to the recency, frequency, monetary, the person who engages with everything will get an email every day because they're engaging with everything. And if for whatever reason they stop engaging with things, you will stop sending them so many emails. So if anyone ever complains, oh man, I get a lot of emails from you, you don't need to say it because you already know. The reason why you get a lot of emails is because you read a lot of emails. If you stop reading my emails, I will send you less emails. Yeah? And that's how you know you're never a pest in somebody's life, because you're actually giving them what they want at the speed at which they want. And you're, yeah, it's as simple as that. You're giving them what they want at the speed at which they want, the speed at which they're happy to consume content.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're pretty much out of time. Is there a place people can go to carry on learning about this? Is there a place that people can sign up for your work?
Yeah, so if they go to my website, which is rolandeva.co.uk, so Roland is rolandeva.co.uk, I've got a blog that has, you know, 100 blogs and videos on there. I've got several free ebooks that they can download. And when I call them ebooks, these aren't, you know, 3 or 4 pages of story. These are like 12,000 words. So
I could never imagine you writing 3 pages about anything.
Well, exactly. You know, so yeah, they're getting, you know, good, valuable and actionable content in there. So yeah, go download my ebook. Guess what? You will get put into the behavioral nurture sequence. And I would love to, you know, if anybody's interested in me doing this for them, if they go to the services page and they can book a 30-minute call with me on there, and we can talk about how I can help them do this in their business.
Great. I think even your Facebook ads are longer than 3 pages, actually. But that's a whole separate conversation for another day. Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk soon.
All right, that's brilliant. Thanks a lot, Rob. Take care.
If you found this episode helpful, you can continue your education with us through our Maze Insider membership program. As a Maze Insider, you'll get our monthly print newsletter, a monthly members-only webinar, plus unlimited support from myself and Jonathan through our private Google group. Go to mazemarketingpodcast.com/insider and enter the promo code PODCAST at checkout for a free 1-month trial.